The year 1967, Canada's 100th birthday as a nation, the Centennial of Confederation was greeted joyfully by Canadians from coast to coast. It was to be a year of celebrations in the grand manner, the year of the big show, Expo 67, and it was to be a year of rededication on the parts of all Canadians to work together for the welfare of the nation. Prime Minister Lester B. Pearson saw it this way.
This day, the 100th anniversary of the beginning of our Confederation, our centennial birthday, belongs to every Canadian. Those of us whose privilege it is to represent in public office the people of this country will play our formal roles in the pageants of this historic day. But the history and the heritage we celebrate are the possession of all Canadians. Whatever our origin, whatever our occupation, wherever we may live and work, it is our day. Every one of you, and every Canadian before you, had had some part, however humble and unsung, in building the magnificent structure of Confederation that we honor and salute today. Just as the world, to survive the nuclear future, must become a community of peace for all mankind, so must our country be a true homeland for all Canadians as we move into our second century. The fathers of Confederation and those who followed them have built a strong foundation for this Canadian home. And as we begin our second 100 years, we must continue to work at furnishing it so that it will fill the hopes and the aspirations of all of our people for a good life. This is a memorable day for Canada. Ours is a good land. Our centennial resolve on this day must be to make it a better land for our children and our children's children. God bless our country.
Another of Canada's national figures, Tommy Douglas, leader of the New Democratic Party, also was heard on the subject of Canada's 100th birthday.
The beginning of Canada's second century is a time for looking to the past with appreciation and to the future with dedication. We can take justifiable pride in the fact that together we have done great things in the past. We and our forefathers have cleared and settled half a continent. We have built a society out of many nationalities and faiths. In time of war, our people have played a valiant role in the defense of human freedom. And now, in this second century, we must set new goals for Canada. We must not rest content until every child has enough to eat, and every student has a chance to study, and everyone who wishes to work can find a job, and everyone who wants a decent home can obtain one. We must make Canada a land where old people can walk the earth with dignity and young people can live useful and meaningful lives. This must be our goal for Canada's second century. We can strive for nothing better, and we must be content with nothing less.
The leader of the Progressive Conservative Opposition, John Diefenbaker, also spoke of the centennial.
In this centennial year, we will pay homage and respect to our past, to the missionaries and the explorers and the pioneers and the statesmen. At the same time, we will look ahead to the future. Canada, my country, and your country. Canada, the nation in which, under the Bill of Rights, Canadians are freed from the stigma that so often has affected nations. The stigma of discrimination. We build one Canada, whatever the race. We have a priceless heritage of freedom and justice. It's for all of us living in the Canada of today to build upon the work in the years ahead.
But Mr. Diefenbaker was not to retain the leadership of his party throughout 1967. There was a strong movement to call a leadership convention to choose a new chief, and Mr. Diefenbaker bowed to the pressure.
Were for under all the circumstances, I've come to the conclusion, after consultation with Canadians in all parts of the nation, that any delay in calling a national convention will add to confusion, generate uneasiness, and harm the interests of the nation. I believe that there should be a national leadership convention at an early date, the earliest possible date. At that convention and to that convention should come Canadians, delegates democratically chosen by the constituency organization, not delegates at large named by provincial organization.
Mr. Diefenbaker admitted that opposition to his leadership went back many years.
The opposition to me goes back many years. Many of those who are against me now opposed me in 1956 at the convention. I'm not concerned with that. What I am concerned with, that the Conservative Party shall remain what it has been during the past 10 years, a people's party. It shall not become the plaything or the puppet of a powerful few. Some think they can make it so. They must not succeed in their endeavors. They will not.
Although admitting a powerful opposition existed, Mr. Diefenbaker said he'd sing no swan song. However, he delayed until the last moment at the convention before announcing that he would seek re-election.
I know that some will interpret what I am saying as being a swan song. Let me say it once. This is no swan song. Those who will interpret it that way do not know me. I've never in the past, and I shall not now, desert the course of a lifetime of at all times upholding principle and of standing for those things which, in my opinion, are good for Canada, for the people of this nation, never forgetting the humblest of our people.
Among the earliest to announce that he would seek the leadership of the Conservative Party was former Cabinet Minister George Hees.
It was decided to hold a leadership convention. And Mr. Diefenbaker, whose whole career has been devoted to strengthening the democratic process, has urged that the convention should be held just as soon as possible. The executive committee of the party has set the date as the 6th of September. Therefore, I believe that it is appropriate for those who are considering putting their names forward for consideration at the convention to do so at this time. And I wish to announce that I have decided to let my name stand as a candidate for the leadership of the Progressive Conservative Party of Canada. I believe that I can unify the party and build it into a force which is modern and effective and can do a very effective job for this country.
At that time, Mr. Hees said he was looking forward to the convention, but September told a different story.
I'm looking forward to the convention a great deal, to the work and to the exchange of ideas that will take place. And I'm convinced that it will greatly strengthen our party, and by so doing, it will benefit the country.
John Diefenbaker remained an enigma at the Conservative Leadership Convention in Toronto's Maple Leaf Gardens until the final hour. However, he finally accepted nomination and made two emotion-filled appeals to the candidates.
And that's the message that I give you tonight. There's a wonderful feeling here. There's a devotion to principle. There's a recognition that only in unity is there strength. Loyalty to the principles of the party. Fair criticism always. But my friends, let us reserve our attitudes of belligerence against the other side. That's the message that I give you tonight. That's the message that I give you tonight. With malice towards none and charity towards all, let us march forth from here. Let us face issues. I had my opportunity last night. I'm not going to take advantage of you this evening or of the other candidates. To do so would give me an unfair advantage in having the opportunity of speaking twice. Ladies and gentlemen, unite, unite, unite. And if you do, the 12,300 votes that separated us in 1965 from victory, and we'd have had it if we'd all worked together. Let us join together tonight in a dedication to the preservation of the greatness of this nation. Let us give the assurance that we in this nation will make our policies by Canadians, for Canadians, and in Canada, that each and every one of us will do our part in human betterment to raise standards so that when we have passed from this scene, men and women will be able to say of us, it's been a better country because we've been here. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you.
But the gallant old warrior was not to be successful, and the delegates named as the new leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, Premier Robert Stanfield of Nova Scotia. Another gallant old warrior began to feel the press of years. Prime Minister Lester B. Pearson spoke with newsmen on April 22nd, his 70th birthday.
I feel very tempted to divorce myself from other responsibilities and write and read and give a lecture or two at a university. I've talked about this, and lead a life that hasn't got quite the pressures that this one has. And as you get older, this, as far as I'm concerned, becomes a more tempting prospect. Because I'd like to do this before I'm too old to do it. But I've learned in my 70 years now, you do what you have to do.
Although he had hinted that he intended to step down in the not-too-distant future, it was not until December 14th that Mr. Pearson announced that he was resigning as the leader of the Liberal Party and as the Prime Minister of Canada. To a specially called news conference, Mr. Pearson read his letter of resignation.
Dear Senator Nicholl, who, as you know, is the President of the Liberal Federation of Canada, I wish to inform you of my decision, taken after lengthy and serious consideration, to resign from the leadership of our party. I feel that this is the appropriate time for me to take this step. I do not need to tell you that I have reached this decision with great regret, but I am convinced that it is the right one. I shall soon have been in the public service of Canada for 40 years, 19 of those years as Member of Parliament for Algoma East. For the last 10, I've had the great honor and privilege to be the leader of the Liberal Party, and for nearly 5 years, the Prime Minister of our country. No leader of a political party could have received more loyalty, support, and friendship than I have. For that, and for the opportunity to serve my country through the party, I will always be deeply grateful. I would like to ask you, as President of the Liberal Federation of Canada, to take at once the necessary steps to organize a national convention at an appropriate place and time. Until that convention has chosen my successor, I will, of course, continue to serve as leader of the party. Yours sincerely. That's a letter I sent to Senator Nicholl this morning.
Another political party lost a national leader in 1967 when Robert Thompson announced that he was stepping down as head of the Socreds.
At the National Leadership Convention held in November 1965, which I was re-elected national leader, it was on my acceptance of the leadership was on the basis that the provincial organizations which make up the national association were to provide not only organizational but financial support. During the intervening 16 or 17 months that have passed, this has not been the case. In fact, unless there is more support, both from the organizational standpoint and financially, it's impossible to carry on a national party. So true is this statement that I might just say the treasury is empty. And this is my opinion, that it is impossible to carry on as a national party unless the component parts of that party fulfill their responsibilities. This they have not done.
Early in Canada's centennial year, one of this nation's most beloved figures spoke to the people about the destiny of the country. Governor General Georges P. Vanier had this to say.
I appeal to all Canadians to set aside pettiness, selfishness, and intolerance. I hope and pray that Canadians will in this way give an example of fraternal coexistence, and that our flag will symbolize to each of us and to the world the unity of purpose and high resolve to which destiny beckons us.